Hello. Clown, how are you?
Good, how are you, man?
I'm doing well, thanks for having me on.
No problem. Where are you at right now?
I am in West Hollywood. I moved here, I want to say about 2.5 years ago from Massachusetts.
Big East Coast move from there to the West Coast. How's it fare as far as what you're used to?
I really like it. I mean, definitely, I like it more pre-pandemic. You know, I like the nice weather, a lot of good restaurants. Most of our musical and business team is out here, so it kind of made things a lot easier in terms of meetings and just getting FaceTime with people. But definitely miss the East Coast in a lot of different ways, especially around this time of year. You know, I like the hoodie weather and the more changing of the seasons. So that I do miss.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people in the world really understand how important it is for the human psyche and the human soul to be a part of the four seasons, you know, to be able to literally as a human navigate through a fierce winter into a beautiful spring. You know, a lot of people just don't, it's not a selfish thing, I think, but I think a lot of humans in this world miss out by not having to adorn themselves with the seasons.
I agree. I think it's one of those things that builds character. You know, going through the, especially like the difficult months, like in winter and stuff, it makes a man out of you, I think.
Yeah, I always tell people, once in a while I get into these like clown-made conspiracies, and I used to really like to smash on holidays, you know, because like take February, for example. In Iowa, I'm in Des Moines, Iowa, and in February is like suicide weather. It's so cold. It's so doom and gloom that I feel the world deemed it 28 days. You know, like let's get rid of those extra days just to help people get out of that month. You know, and then you back up to Christmas where it's like, okay, everybody gets everything. And then New Year's, it's like, well, if you fucked up, you can say sorry and start over. And it just goes on like that. So February just being this month of the year that everyone back home just really dreads. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, 100%. And I think the way you describe those seasons, like those months coming right after each other, definitely makes sense. You know, obviously around the late December, you're into sometimes the sin, so it's good to cleanse yourself on January 1st. Perfect timing for that.
Yeah, perfect timing. Just before you're gonna go into the kill me month of total frozenness. So we tried. I'm a lot older now, so we try to get out. Our kids are grown; they can take care of themselves. So we try to escape 2 weeks at a time in anywhere, in any direction that is warm, just to help our brains. Because it can just feel like a giant hand pushing down on your psychic, you know? And that's, it can be frustrating.
Definitely, definitely. I feel like there's got to be some sort of correlation with weather and depression. I think sometimes that's got to go hand in hand.
Oh, 100%. I mean, 100%, especially around here, you can just see it. But at the same time, when spring comes, everybody, you know, ends up not wilting anymore and just kind of blooms into, like, you see people running, you know, it's 40 degrees out, but the sun's out in, like, you know, mid-March, and people are out running with just shorts because they've had it. You know, they're ready for the change.
So definitely, man. I mean, and wouldn't you say that you know, the weather that you're describing in Iowa, something like that kind of hellish winter, probably in a lot of ways contributed to how aggressive and heavy Slipknot became because of that kind of shit?
Well, I don't know about, I understand the word became, but it does. It goes hand in hand. So we never became because it always just was. I mean, you're exactly right. I can remember back, we did a lot of practicing during those months. And that's when things sort of changed in my life, is when I had a practical usage for myself that wasn't, you know, making sure the house is bundled up, making sure people are safe, making sure the driveway is done, getting done the sorts of things that need to be done weekly in order to survive. However, when we started, it was an excellent time to just practice 4 or 5 hours a night every day and sharpen in on the skills, because nothing was happening outdoors and no one was really motivating to situations created by outdoors, so we could just create that isolation for ourselves. And I'm with you. I love hoodie weather and windbreaker weather and jacket weather. And Slipknot's always been a jacket band. Always were able to express ourselves more wearing our hoodies and our windbreakers and things of the such before we were signed, and wearing them out in town always made a big difference.
No, definitely. I can see that for sure.
So let me jump into it. I usually in my career, in my art, I always let art find me. I let music find me. I let movies find me. Everything's moving so quickly, and there's just so much music being released every year. Seems like every year there's new genres introduced in theory, and that makes it harder for me, even harder to find stuff, because I don't like things being pushed on me. So in going out and sort of sifting through the normal waves and finding your art, I wanted to ask right away, and there's no angles in my show. I don't have any angles. I'm not that kind of person. My show has been designed because of all the years of doing interviews of people not asking me anything I want to be asked, only asking me what their editors and their bosses and whatever bullshit excuses they want to make up about why they're asking me the moronic questions they're asking me. So I more or less don't do interviews anymore or press, because it's not that someone asks me, hey, what's the mask for? I understand there's a new kid in town. I understand there's a 10-year-old, 11-year-old, 14-year-old, whatever, discovering Slipknot and may not know. So it's good to remind humans of the cause. But I just can't stand, you know, all the bullshit. So don't think that I have any angles. But I was reading that you guys, and I'm asking this specifically because I used to own a bar, but it said you guys started off, or at least you, because I know you jam with different people these days, or have for a while or something like that, but it said that you were interested in like ska punk in your earlier years as a creator. Is that true? Did you play a lot of ska and punk? That where you came from?
Yeah, when I started the band, that was the direction we were headed in. I had grown up sort of on more like alternative rock, radio bands and stuff from like Seattle, like Soundgarden, Nirvana, and then eventually sort of drifted my way into punk and ska. And you know, those were the bands that we were worshiping, you know, in high school, like Goldfinger, Real Big Fish, Less Than Jake. Still wear those influences on my sleeve in terms of like melodic sensibilities, and then just I wouldn't say we abandoned that sound, but we just kind of began to have more eclectic tastes. And then, you know, today I think our sound is sort of a combination of all those influences, including the early punk ska stuff.
I agree, because when I owned my club, it was called Safari Club. There was a really big punk and ska movement and noise and like underground noise. And so 90% of what I booked, you know, was Real Big Fish, Goldfinger, you know, all these guys. I mean, it goes on and on. The Libertine are like, let's see. I mean, I could go on. U.S. Bombs, more punk. You know, lots mm-hmm. and lots and lots of punk. But I would watch all the shows, and I got to be friends with some of the cats in Goldfinger, and we used to play with them a lot. Our original manager was a programming manager at a sort of a modern station that played all that, and she brought Goldfinger into town all the time. So we would open up, and it was always amazing because, you know, the fans were expecting always to see, you know, Goldfinger and bands of such opening up, and then here comes the Knot, you know, opening up.
Yeah.
And we always really liked it. You know, I always felt like it was a good test, a testament of what we knew we were. Like, it's never about, to me, it was never about like, oh, we don't belong here. You know, it's the Blues Brothers scenario where, you know, we're a blues band in a country bar. You know, I never did that. Fans are fans, and I love all sorts of music, so I realize that if people are coming to a show to see Goldfinger, they quite honestly could go out being Slipknot fans as well. So, but I bring it all up because those bands all have a certain kind of energy. And when I was hanging out with Goldfinger back in the day, I remember having a conversation with them. Their energy is so spiked in unrealness. I mean, every show and every second of the show, it's just jump after jump, slam, you know, just insanity. So I remember asking the singer once, I'm like, how many shows you guys been doing? He's like, well, last year we did 412. And I'm like, you did 412 shows in a year? He's like, yeah, we'll fly in and do a festival, you know, during the day at a weird spot, then we'll get some rest, and then we'll play at night. And I'm like, at this caliber of energy? And it's like, absolutely. So I recognize that bands like that had this certain energy to them that was just unprecedented. We also played with the band The Urge a lot. And, you know, I agree with you that it could be sort of a platform to get into what you're doing now. I see similarities of what you're doing with that genre of music, but it's buried deep in. It's more like philosophy and kinetic energy. Would you agree that it's still inside you performing the more aggressive stuff that you're doing now?
100%. I think, you know, you point out the energy of a band like Goldfinger and bands of that ilk. I think that maybe like subconsciously was one of the driving forces in me really loving that. And the first time I saw Goldfinger was at the Palladium, and I went home and I formed the band that night after I got back from the show because of the energy that you're talking about. You know, they had all their fans up on the stage, and the singer gave me the mic to sing a part in the song, and it was just that sort of chaotic kind of anarchy in the pit, and that vibe of the show that really sold me on wanting to do this for my profession. And I do remember, I have this image of John Feldman, and he had a Slipknot sticker on his guitar at some point, the singer of Goldfinger, so. That doesn't surprise me that you guys had that little connection there. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was kind of a special days, you know. Linkin Park would roll through town, young kids, I can remember doing, you know, going to their shows, opening up for like Goldfinger or something like that. Because there was, you know, like I said, our manager was a programming manager, so she brought all these radio bands together for little things. But I can remember hanging out with Chester. He was just so young. We were so young, and just talking music before they even blew up. And we were just punk-ass kids, you know, thinking about the future. So I learned a lot from all the, I learned a lot from all those bands by just watching. And, you know, Slipknot has a different kind of energy. And if I put Slipknot up against, like, a Goldfinger, the energies are so different but the same. You know, like, I'll watch them and I'll just be like, what the hell is going on? Like, he's jumping and, you know, knees to the chin. And, like, you know, I'm over 200 pounds. I can't get my knees to my chin too much. But then we have a certain sort of energy that is very fatiguing as well. And I think it's because we don't really know what we're doing. It's just coming directly from the vibration of music and sort of the scenario of the scenery. You know, the Nodians, how crazy they are. But yeah, I miss those times, and I miss that era of music, because, you know, I was getting going before, like, you know, Great White had that unfortunate incident of pyro, and that kind of changed the game in venues and clubs and moshing and, you know, just all these things. So I'm very blessed to have been able to still grow up in an era of absolute insanity once in a while, you know?
No, absolutely, man. And, yeah, I see what you're saying, as far as, like, the Slipknot energy being different than, like, you know, that punk energy, but it, somehow it kind of meets in the middle, because it's sort of, I think what they share a few traits, and especially just, like, kind of unbridled energy, you know what I mean? It's like, it's not choreographed, it's just coming from a place of honesty, and I think that's where those energies kind of meet in the same ground.
Yeah, I agree. Those are always the energies that get you hurt too, give you injuries, and, you know, those are always the ones you're like, what the hell was I thinking, you know? But
definitely. I jumped off the stage once. This was like probably 10 years ago at a small club in Tucson called The Rock. I don't know if you ever happened to go through there back in the early days, but I ended up breaking my heel. So I dove into the middle of the pit where no one was at, and spent the rest of the tour on crutches. So that was an interesting experience.
On Ozfest, I had most of my buffoonery before we were like, got anywhere, but I can remember on Ozfest, our very first tour ever, I remember jumping off the stage into a barrel, thinking the barrel was full of trash, and the barrel was actually full of water and was one of the counterweights holding the stage down. And I can remember jumping in and being completely stuck in this barrel. I'm kind of looking up and see some reflections, and I thought to myself, I just killed myself. I'm dead. Like, I couldn't get out. I couldn't move it. And luckily one of our techs was watching, and he just kicked that thing over and pulled me out one-handed. And I laid there for like 5 minutes contemplating what I almost did to myself, trying to reassure myself that I would never do anything that stupid again. And I don't even know what got me in there, but somehow I jumped and dove right into this thing mid-song. And that was the last time I did anything without really thinking it through, you know.
That's awesome, yeah. Sometimes you got to test the boundaries before you know what they are, you know.
Yeah, we're still doing that. I'm sure you're still doing that. So I listened to a lot of stuff, and I watched a lot of stuff. And one thing that I was watching, and excuse me, I'm just not good with names, and memorizing things I just watched until like I can really get it in. But it seems like what I did see that you guys, what you do is like, you know, this one thing I was watching, you were making a little movie out of it where you were going to stage and your knuckles were all bloody and one of the guys in the band or tour manager or managers like asking you if he should be concerned. And then, you know, there's all this choreographed like movie stuff and it all pertains to the songs and the lyrics and I guess your guys' vibe. So what I wanted to ask you was, I mean, my role in Slipknot that I take, you know, I take sort of an artistic expression route, is kind of what gets me off in life, is vision and the next thing and what's moving me in the day, these sorts of things. So I'll spend years in between cycles trying to figure out what the next thing is for us, or you know, what's the next mask, what's the next album, what pertains to us during this life that we're living with the people dying around us, you know, relatives getting older, kids getting older, yourself getting older. So I look at what you created and I'm thinking, man, I spent a lot of time just trying to figure out who I am and what I'm going to be. And I look at what you're doing and you have the songs, you have the music, you have all the pieces of the pie, the stage presence, the what you do, how you act, you know, obviously interviews, all these things that are part of the pie. But then you've thrown one in where you're making movies that pertain to the vibe of your band. And I'm like, you know, and it's good and it's thought out. And, you know, you guys are acting and you guys are like playing the part. And to me, that just seems like, I don't want to say a headache because I love art, so it would never be a headache. But to think that you're going to release an album, a song, which is like, let's say the single, and then you have all this other stuff. I can't imagine like the work it takes to bring your vision together to make it pop. Is it natural for you? Is it easy for you? Do you need a lot of time to bring all these things together? Do you have people that resist? Is everybody in? You know, tell me a little bit about what you got going on.
Well, definitely, and thank you for pointing that out. For me, my you know, first love was always music, but right up there, you know, neck and neck, was always film. From the very early ages, very early stages of my life, I discovered horror. You know, I would go with my mom to the grocery store. And in that particular store, there was a VHS video store, which obviously are extremely extinct at this point. But back then, that was the way you watched your movies. And for whatever reason, I ended up in that horror section every time I went to the video store. And you know, after a lot of convincing, my parents eventually let me rent Halloween. And from there, you know, it just became like this sort of lifelong obsession of watching all the different movies. I was always really drawn to the slasher genre, and I still love it to this day. And I think that once the band got to a certain stage, I wanted to really combine that other love with the music. And it's definitely, as you pointed out, it's definitely an arduous task. There's a lot of planning that goes into it. But at the end of the day, it's a lot of fun for me to be able to sort of, you know, live out my fantasy of not only, you know, being able to play music for a living and make music that people enjoy, but to also start to make a film component to what we do. And I just look at it as a lot of fun, man. But yeah, it's definitely a lot of extra work. But you know, you know better than anyone that I think that extra stuff that you do besides just music adds to really what makes the band special. And I always approach things not from like, you know, this is a calculated business move or anything like that, more just what I would want to see as a fan. And for me, I always loved bands that had that something extra, that had that other component that made it just more than just music. It was like a movement kind of, and I guess that's what I'm trying to create with what we're doing, to have that something extra there, and for us it's the film.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I mean, I was always drawn. You know, I started off with Kiss, you know, as a real young kid, but there was just something about Kiss that I had to move on from right away. And, you know, it got me in, and it's, you know, it helped me, but it's not where I wanted it to be musically. It's not where I wanted it to be. Like, you know, I'm in a much more darker headspace and a much more violent, if you will, sort of aggressive mind space. But I always loved bands that had a little more and would take it a little bit more, because, you know, it just, more is more when it comes to something that you love. You know, music's God to me. So anything that God can bring through music, you know what I mean? Like, so
yeah,
it's all I live for is music, all day and all night. It's with me, sometimes on, sometimes off, but it's really just where I begin and end my day, mostly is with tracks. And if I didn't have it, I wouldn't be able to move on. But I agree, most bands, I can remember going to Lollapalooza with my wife. It was the second Lollapalooza. Ministry was on that. And, you know, I'm not afraid to say that we were, you know, we were partying, and we made sure that the height of what we were doing was, you know, climaxing right when Ministry took the stage. And it was during the Psalm 69 era. And I can just remember Al rolling out with like these giant rolling bone things that he made. And at one point, somebody came out wearing a giant George Bush head and just walked from one side of the stage to the other. And it was just mental, you know, and the sun went down and the moon came up and, you know, things shifted. And, you know, all day you got great music. You got wonderful bands all day. Great bands. Soundgarden, you know, Dinosaur Jr., you know, all the great second stage bands. But it's always been the bands that bring just a little bit more for the imagination that always twists me up, you know.
Definitely, man. And one thing I do remember about Ministry when I saw them, I seen the play once, was it was the goddamn loudest show I had ever seen. That's what I remember.
Yeah.
I don't know if they were as loud back then, but holy shit. That was.
Well, they have a lot of, you know, in their favor, they have a lot of direct instruments that can just pound you, you know, synths, could be drum machines, could be all these direct input machines that just kill you. That can always be a curse too, just to jump subjects. I always love, one of my personal little defeats out on the road is, you know, we all strive to have that awesome intro, you know, that we make, that we sit and we make and we bump it direct and it's always really loud. The lights go off, everybody moves up front. But then when you start playing, you know, your instruments and the analog comes in, you know, the decibels go down. So that's always kind of, I love that about watching bands. I like to see who's taking the time to make sure that their music, isn't softer than the direct input sampling or art piece, if you will, that they've made prior playing. Because, you know, that stuff is quite a bit louder, you know.
Oh, definitely. I agree. You don't want to climax at the intro. You know, you want when the band comes in to be the real punch in the face, so to speak.
It does make me happy though when somebody has blown it right on the intro, and then you know they go into how you doing, and you're like no, and I mean to this day I still have a little sadistic side in me of competition, I guess, of, you know, because we work so hard on every element, you know, from the intro song to the outro song to time in between songs. Everything is thought out and a lot of work. So I like to be rewarded as much as possible with, you know, doing the right thing, you know, and sometimes it's good to sort of laugh at somebody else to feel like, okay, I'm on the right road, you know. So
yeah.
What are you doing? Go ahead, say it.
Oh, I was just gonna say that I think healthy competition is always a good thing. You know, good spirited competition. It's keeps you moving. So I totally agree with that. I was gonna ask, how many days do you guys usually do of like pre-production before a tour? Of that, you know, because you guys are doing such large scale production and stuff.
It's pretty funny us, because you would think that we do a lot, and we are so from the gut that, you know, when I design a stage, it's more or less designed to make sure everybody can do what they can do without getting hurt. And, you know, we'll rent 4 days, and it'll take everybody 2 days just to show up and get on stage. And then we'll do one real go through of just the songs. And then we're lucky if we get anything else done after that, because we just,
right.
We've been doing it so long, and no one wants to be told what to do in Slipknot. That's part of it. And no one really wants to pre-think what you're going to do. So we get up there. It's more about making sure the techs are comfortable. It's more about everything being in place and working. But we always laugh, you know, because we'll be like, well, let's play this song. We haven't played it in a couple of years. We'll count it off, get through it, and it's perfect. Now, I mean, maybe not perfect, but we'll just kind of look at each other like, okay. You know, like, that was easy, but we've been blessed with that. I'm in the company of insanely talented people who take what they do as serious as their own life. So it's just all built in. So when we're in not mode, it's do all, you know, it's like bring the best of the best of the best. While we're doing this. So we're lucky. So it's kind of more of a waste of money than anything, because we get out there and once we know that we're doing it, we're out. And then, you know, no one can predict what we're going to do on stage, not even ourselves. So that's a lot of it. It's just keeping that artistic tension inside and getting ready to unleash it on a show with all things charging and firing at once. You know, it could just, the energy could shut the show off and we'd be done, or it could just heighten it to another level.
Absolutely.
So tell me a little bit about what you guys got going on right now. And, you know, for us, you know, we've canceled several tours. We keep rebooking them, but what do you guys have going on before the pandemic, and what do you got going on during, and what are your future plans?
We were actually out in Europe with Papa Roach and Hollywood Undead right when the pandemic was hitting, and it was interesting to be over there it actually seemed like the coronavirus was almost following the tour. You know, we'd play in Spain, and then 3 days later, Spain would be on lockdown. So we ended up getting through most of the tour, but about a week before its end, we got off the stage in Germany, and our tour manager said, we're going home. So we jumped on the bus and drove through the middle of the night to Frankfurt. And that was the same night that, the travel ban was announced. So we thought the airport would be absolute insanity, but it looks like we just beat the crazy rush that everyone saw on TV with like thousands of people lined up at the border crossing or the security measures, if you will. But we got home fine. We made it, and I've been back in L.A. ever since. Obviously a lot of cons to the pandemic, but one of the silver linings is that, we've had a lot of time to work on new material, so we're getting ready to start tracking stuff, and I've been planning the next album and the film that would, coexist with that, and just doing sort of a lot of desk work to try to prepare for when life resumes, so that when it does, we're ready to go.
Well, that's good. You made good usage of your time during the usage of this pandemic and what they're telling us to do. That's good that you got a lot of stuff done.
Yeah, I think that, it took a lot of time for me to sort of settle into the idea of what was going to happen. But, after a couple of weeks, I just told myself that, let's make the best of it, so to speak, and make it so that the time spent at home will be, not for nothing. And I do have to admit, most of the life, the last 20 years, been on the road, definitely more the last 10. But, I can't remember the last time I had 7 months off. So definitely trying to put that time to good use.
Well, I think that's an interesting statement, because I think that's my biggest bitch about all this, is that right when everything hit, this is just my opinion, and I'd love to call people out, but it's just not my style, and it's not really what I bring to my show. But right when it hit, you had, in my opinion, you had a lot of pathetic artists that just went for themselves immediately. And no one even really knew what was happening yet. And you just had these people that would go on and, for instance, you would have somebody in a big pop band and they're horribly dressed. Like, when I say horribly dressed, I mean, they're like in sweatpants or something, and they're just chilling. Fine, you can chill. I don't care what you do. But then they take a song that they worked so hard on with a producer, and they made this legendary song. And then this guy's in here jamming it on acoustic guitar or some crap and just sort of like jamming it. And it just came off like he was just going for himself because he's bored because he's never had time off. I'm just speaking hypothetically here. But
right.
I saw a lot of that right at the beginning, and what it felt like to me was that these people aren't used to having time off. And, I've always had time off. I've always enjoyed in between cycles because it lets me physically repair, mentally repair, and most importantly, spiritually repair myself to be ready for what will be the next thing. So my hopes have always been that people are making great usage of their time right now, getting with family, doing things that normally they can't do because they're working their circuit or whatever. So it's great that everybody can have this time to really acknowledge what they do and what other things they do or what they haven't been doing. You know, this is a big wake-up call for that. So, I mean, it's good that you've had desk time and time to put things out instead of, like, I guess, in my opinion, desperately just get out and have to let everybody know, like, hey, I'm here and I'm bored, so I'm going to do all this. You know, that's what it looks like to me. I'm not saying that's true for everyone, but some people, it really looks ugly to me, you know?
No, definitely. And I think these kind of situations, these kind of times that sort of throw people into situations that they're not used to, I think, you know, your true colors are sort of revealed, you know, what you can handle emotionally, physically, mentally, career-wise, relationship-wise. It kind of puts you to the test. And I think as much bad that's coming out of the pandemic, I think there'll be a lot of good too. And, you know, I'm always of the mindset that you don't know what you have until it's gone, which I've, you know, experienced a lot in my life. So I think a lot of good is going to come out of taking away the cushy luxuries that so much of us are so used to, and taking that away for a while, because I think then when it comes back, we're all going to be hopefully leading a more appreciative lifestyle.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the very first time I ever saw anybody wear a mask was in 2000. We went to Japan, and that was the very first time I ever saw anybody wearing a mask to prevent other people from getting sick. And I can remember at first it was sort of funny looking, and it kind of just was awkward. But then when it hit me like a ton of bricks, I was like, wow, how worldly conscious is that, that someone would put on a mask to prevent somebody else from getting sick so they could continue their job and provide for their family. You know, so I feel a lot of good's going to come out in the cleansiness part of it, where people are going to take that sort of mentality more serious. You know, like, I think it's good that, you know, we're conscious that maybe we should have a little distance between each other, because you don't know who is sick. And, you know, wash doors and handles and these sorts of things, I feel like they're all good prerequisites to a healthier society, possibly, you know?
No, 100%. And I hope that we get to see if that sort of paid off in the not too distant future.
So since you're in West Hollywood, how I know we touched on a little bit, but how is it there? I've spent a lot of years of my life in Los Angeles, Hollywood, you know, over in Burbank, everywhere.
Yeah.
What's the temperature right now? I mean,
it started off to be a bit. It was a bit gloomy when I woke up, which I usually like. I like the sort of overcast vibe, but it's been pretty hot lately, you know, almost like about a week ago, I want to say it was almost in the 90s. Right now it's about 70, which is, you know, not too bad. But like we said before, you know, the October month to me, it is so like synonymous with cold, you know, a bit colder weather and the leaves rustling, and I'm sort of missing that vibe right now. LA is kind of like pretty much the same weather all the time.
Yeah, that is one beautiful thing about LA. But what really the temperature of the people, how's everybody doing? Everybody out on the street, and I mean, how's everybody handling and faring right now?
It seems like, you know, for the most part, people are sort of respecting, you know, the mask stuff. But, you know, I went to San Diego the other day, and it didn't seem like there was a pandemic at all. And I just, you know, drove past some bars that were sort of, you know, those kind of half open with the garage door kind of thing. So there's a lot of open air. So it's not so inside, kind of half in, half out. And I didn't see anyone wearing a mask other than the bartenders. So it's a weird situation, you know. It's hard to trust any politician, in my opinion. So it seems like we're constantly getting misinformation about the mask shit. But, you know, as a horror fan, you know, I never have a problem wearing a mask. So it kind of goes with the vibe of our band, and you know, and kind of yours as well, right? It's funny because when the pandemic started to happen, it was the only time for normal people where seeing someone without a mask was scarier than seeing someone with a mask, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I right from the beginning, it's like, you know, it wasn't going to affect me in any way or shape or form if I had to wear a mask, because, you know, I wear something well worse wearing, you know, something well more uncomfortable than anything I could just wear in a grocery store. So pretty easy for us, obviously. Yeah, and it's strange right now, all this happening and sort of getting to the end of it right on this election, you know, period. It's all strange coincidences and timing, and makes you wonder, you know, just what our agenda is. But rest assured, I've seen it. Life's going to be back and better than ever. We all needed a wake-up call, and we got it. So I'm hoping things will move forward in the way that they need to move, and we'll all get back to it bigger and better, you know?
That's what I'm hoping for too, man. And I'm confident that will be the scenario. And I think once everything comes back, we're going to see such a revitalized, even more than it was, touring community. And I think in the long run, it's going to be good for the touring world. Because again, it goes back to that thing. You don't know what you have till it's gone. And the band that you know, I love this band, but you know, I'll catch them next time. You don't, you know, I hope that mentality kind of dies away, because you don't know when touring will be gone again. And I hope that people don't take things for granted as much in terms of that stuff.
Yeah, we see a lot of that from Americans, don't we? I mean, I always appreciate overseas, because they're like, if we make the trip over the pond, they're coming. You know, they're going to partake in it. And I agree with you. I think that a lot of Americans just take a lot of things for granted. And they're like, next time, you know, there's a certain sort of spoilness there. So I'm with you. And I think it applies to all of life. You know, get it done now. Life is precious. Life isn't anything you should take for granted, because we're all learning. I'm 51 years old, and I've never experienced anything like this in my life, you know, so it's pretty strange. But it's doable. You know, it's still doable. Every part of it's doable.
Definitely. I think it takes obviously a lot of inner strength and you know, support from your friends and family. But at the end of the day, I think to get through something like this, you just got to sort of see the light at the end of the tunnel and sort of know that it will get back to regular, and I hope that you know, our fans out there are finding a way to get through that, because you know, it definitely is it's a fucked up situation. It's difficult.
It is. Well, before we go, I've enjoyed this. Tell me a little bit. What do you got going on tonight, the rest of the week, or got anything planned, or you know, what's your days look like? You know, in certain situations like this, what do you got going on tonight?
Well, I've been hitting the drive-in theater a lot, you know, that which is another sort of silver lining of this whole pandemic. I'm a huge film fan, and I had never been to a drive-in before this whole situation. And as someone that has a real affinity for not only film, but of older films and just older eras, like, you know, the 70s, 60s, 70s, 80s, it's been really cool to be able to watch a movie like Halloween or Friday the 13th in that setting. So I think I'm going to hit a drive-in tonight. And also we're going to be celebrating the announcement of the release of our first live album, which is going to be coming out towards the end of the month, and just kind of prepping for all that stuff.
Cool. Yeah, live albums are always their own, you know, mysteries. You know, they're so different than regular albums. So how long have you been planning a live album?
For almost a year. We headlined at the Palladium in Worcester, Massachusetts, in late November of last year. And we filmed the whole thing with, you know, multi-camera shots. And we knew that we'd eventually release it both on, you know, the audio and the video portion. So we've been putting it together for quite a while. And turned out, you know, this time seemed to be the best for us to release something like that. But it's been exciting to you know, help edit the film and really get everything set up with the artwork, which is really cool. It's sort of like a play on the NOFX album, I Heard They Suck Live, but it's called I Heard They Kill Live. And so it should be exciting to get that out to the fans this week.
Yeah, that's is the live show, is it all one show, or is it many different shows?
It's all one show. We decided to just do it at one, and it turned out great. I'm excited to release that, especially because that specific venue holds so much sort of like rich history for the band. You know, it's the first place that I saw a club show, the first place the band ever played, and has been my hometown venue for, you know, since I was in high school. So to be able to release it from there is really cool.
That's really cool. Yeah, I like that kind of stuff. Well, man, it's been a pleasure. I just want to say thank you. Keep your head up. When I come to LA, we'll get together sometime.
That'll be awesome, man. I'd love to meet you in person. And thanks for having me on the show. I've always admired Slipknot, so it was cool to get to, you know, shoot the shit.
Well, I feel the same way, man. We'll get together, and then you can show me some of that movie stuff and show me some art. You can hang out. And I'd like to just let everybody know that I'm going to have them back on the show in the future. Again, just kind of pick up where we left off. That's what the show's about. Just two people that don't know each other getting together and then starting to know each other.
I'm definitely down, man. It was a good time.
All right, man. Will you be safe? Keep your head up. Keep doing what you're doing. And we'll speak again real soon. And thank you.
Thanks a lot, Clown. Take care.
All right, man. Peace. Bye-bye.